You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and that's what she used to always say.
Welcome, everyone, to this special edition of OWW Radio. Normally, Alex joins me to chat about this week's news and notes from the world of professional wrestling, but today I'm pleased to be joined by a special guest, Ashley Cartier, one of the original gorgeous ladies of wrestling. With the recent release of a full-length documentary, the Glow Girls have been enjoying a nice renaissance, and who better to share with us the impact, the significance of being a Glow Girl than one of the originals? Ashley, welcome to the program.
Thank you, David. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, now, you've seen the documentary, correct?
Yes, I have.
What did you think?
It's absolutely awesome. It's a story that not only wrestlers enjoy or people that are interested in wrestling, it's also appealing to those that have no knowledge of wrestling because it's an actual story about real people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of things that people didn't know that went on behind the scenes, and we were unique because we were all put together in one setting, in a hotel. And we were pretty much quarantined, I would use that word. And so we were very close. You know, it's kind of strange that none of us, we had no battles outside of the ring. It was pretty cool.
That is interesting because you all came from a lot of different backgrounds, right? Some from athletic backgrounds, some from modeling backgrounds, whatever. But to put a group of women together like that and to all get along so well is pretty unique.
Yeah, we were at one of the premieres. One of the questions from the audience was, come on, we want to hear the dirt. You know, you guys had to fight out, you know, have arguments outside of the ring and bump heads. And, you know, none of us could recall that. And, you know, I'm from the pilot group where we were auditioned. We went on auditions as actresses.
Okay.
And that's how we got the positions. Now, my agent was from Sportcasting period. Boy, it's been years. So my agent mainly dealt with athletic talent. So he sent me on the audition. And then I met David McClain. I auditioned, got the part.
Mm-hmm.
And David said to me, you know, I used to be a Raiders cheerleader and an LA Express cheerleader from the USFL. And David said, I know you have some hot girlfriends. You know, do you have anyone that would like to join the show, you know, an audition? So that's when I tried to coerce a few of my friends, and the only two that took the bait were Lisa, which is later Tina Ferrari, and then Jungle Woman.
Okay.
Annette Mariquin. So that's pretty much how it went. And they were also into acting, so we were not wrestlers by any means.
At that point, what did you even know about professional wrestling?
Nothing. I was a dancer, not a fighter, and, you know, I didn't realize that it would be that in-depth with the wrestling portion. So Mondo Guerrero, he trained us, and I can't remember how many days a week, but it was pretty intense. And, you know, some of the girls, we were all actresses, so some of the girls didn't take him very seriously, and he was a professional. You know, I was very fearful of being hurt. And he said to me, you know, he just grabbed me by the face and looked me in the eye. He said, if you listen to me and you let me teach you, you will never get hurt. And, you know, he was right. I sprained my ankle once during training.
Mm-hmm.
And he was awesome. I was doing a monkey toss and I was the person being tossed and I landed incorrectly. Right away, he had me walk and I was in excruciating pain. And he said, if you're in pain, it's good. You didn't break anything. You'll be all good to go in a week. So, and that's exactly what happened. But some of the girls would giggle and not pay attention. And so one day he thought he'd teach us a lesson. He put one of the girls in a sleeper hold. And she was out, you know, because that's really, he taught us that that's the only move that's really effective in the ring, you know, that really works, you know. So she was out cold. And after that, there was no more, you know, slapstick play and joking around in the ring. You know, all the girls were pretty serious. And, you know, of course, I always took it serious because I was afraid to get hurt.
You said you weren't sure it was going to be that much focused on the wrestling, and that was something that the others may have thought as well because they didn't take it seriously at first. But once you started to get training, once Mondo started to show you how this was going to work, Did you really enjoy the training? Did you really like the actual wrestling itself?
Yes, because, you know, it's kind of an outlet. I can kind of understand now why athletes, it's like you're acting like someone else. You're getting your aggressions out in a different way. You know what I mean? It's all mm-hmm. Training consists of throwing yourself time after time after time on the mat, you know? And you have to be pretty tough to do something like that. You know, you learn how to fall and everything, to break your fall with your arms, but you're still throwing yourself.
Right.
You know? And then, of course, you graduate to someone else throws you. And then, you know, we took baby steps. It was pretty intense. We were trained in Watts, which was like one of the worst places in L.A.
Oh, okay.
So we were all scared to death. So there were, like, bodyguards, some kind of a big guy that would meet us at the curbside and take us into the actual training area. And I believe we trained for a couple hours and then leave. And that went on for a while. And then we moved on to Las Vegas for to shoot the pilot. And there were just a couple of us shooting the pilot. I would say no more than 15.
So you were trained in L.A., then you went out, of course, did the show in Las Vegas. Once you were taping the show, how much time was spent, you know, working on your ring skills, doing training actually there, or was it so much into the production of the program itself?
No, once we got to Las Vegas, I was actually told that I would play two parts. I played Mabel, which is a heel from Parts Unknown, and my partner was Sarah. So if you put it together, Sarah and Mabel's S&M, and I came in with chains, and Sarah came in with whips. And actually, Sarah was Royal Hawaiian, and we both played dual roles. So as far as our prep work goes, we had live shows on Saturdays, so we would rehearse for our matches, our live matches on Saturdays. So therefore, you know, Royal Hawaiian and I had dual duties, so we worked a little bit harder. I'm trying to think. I don't think any other characters in the show had dual roles, except for Royal Hawaiian and myself.
That's pretty interesting. And the training stuff is always fascinating to me because a lot of people want to be pro wrestlers, but then they get to the training and it's a lot harder than they think and they don't make it. In this case, once you got trained, you really seemed to enjoy that part of it. I want to go back, though, to when you auditioned. What made you think you'd actually be selected? How many girls showed up at that initial audition?
Well, my audition was not a cattle call, so to speak. And what I was sent by my agent, who was a reputable agent, he represented quite a few of professional football players and, you know, athletes. So my audition was legit. It wasn't something reading in a trade paper, showing up at a place with thousands of girls. I showed up and I actually auditioned for David McClain.
Gotcha.
So I was a little bit different because I hear other girls saying they went on a cattle call and, you know, I was actually sent there by my agent.
When you met David and started talking about the opportunity, you were a cheerleader at that time, correct?
I was probably, I can't remember what time of the year, but I cheered for the Raiders and then the USFL League, the LA Express,
mm-hmm.
they were a summer league. So I was probably cheering in some capacity at that time, you know, but I can't remember what team.
You had, of course, an athletic background. Obviously, you were very talented, but this was a whole new experience. How were you at the talking, the promos, the type, you know, the sketch work?
Well, as far as, you know, GLOW involved public appearances as well, so that fell right into my background with cheerleading. We went on a lot of promotional jobs, you know.
Sure.
We would sign our pictures at different places or, you know, perform, you know, for audiences. But then the other part is that I was pursuing an acting career. So I had, I think at that time I had been on a soap opera, just a small role, and then I was also on an HBO show called First and Ten.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
With Delta Burke.
Yeah.
Yes, and O.J. Simpson, I think, was on it. It was just loaded with football players and cheerleaders and right up my alley. So that was pretty much my background at that point. So I didn't have, you know, I didn't play any sort of sport. I was pretty much a dancer, actress.
Of course, GLOW taped in Las Vegas. All the girls got along pretty well. How did you like living there, though, once you actually had to move to Vegas to tape the show?
Well, like I said, I can't use any other word but quarantine because we pretty much were. There were a lot of rules. There were everywhere you went, you know, we were introduced at that point to Matt Simber, who was pretty much a hard ass. You know, he had his way, and it was really his way or no way. And we had to refer to one another by our stage names. You know, everybody, that's why it was so hard for us to find each other later. I didn't know what a person's real name was. I mean, I knew Lisa because we actually roomed together. That was another thing. They stuck us two to a room. So you think about maybe no more than 200 square feet of living space with another person for a whole year. I shot 52 shows, which was two seasons, and I was in a hotel room with Lisa the whole time.
Wow, that's really interesting. Certainly the less glamorous side, if you will, of being a high-profile athlete.
Yeah, it was quite challenging. But, you know, it's funny. I look back and I laugh because we weren't allowed to hang out with the heels. The baby faces and the heels were not allowed to hang out, well, in public. And for some reason, Tina and I, we befriended Chainsaw and Spike were our best friends. I mean, we hung out with them night and day. We played tennis in the hallway. We just played board games. We got silly, you know, we just trying to go incognito if we went out of the hotel. You know, I remember it was easier for Chainsaw and Spike. They'd put on baseball caps and we'd all go out. And, you know, we were just pushing the envelope because we weren't supposed to go out, but we did anyway. It was really a great time in my life, and you don't realize until you look back how much fun it was, you know?
Did you start to get recognized around town a little bit, you know, as the show got more popular?
Well, of course. The show was filmed at the Riviera Hotel. Every Saturday there were live shows. So to just walk down into the lobby, people were always recognizing us.
Yeah.
Now, with me, you know, if I had a certain persona where I was the Beverly Hills rich chick. So if I wasn't really dressed in character, I remember being out with Spanish Red once, and somebody recognized her and didn't recognize me. And she said, how come people don't recognize? I said, because I don't have my garb on. You know what I mean? I'm just me. So I wasn't as recognizable as some of the other characters, but I know Spanish Red, she really got a lot of recognition because she looked the same in the ring and out of the ring.
What a great name, too, Spanish Red.
Oh, she was awesome. She was an absolute doll. She's the only one, like I would say, if we had any problems with anyone, it was her. And not because she wasn't a great person. It was because, I guess when you're a heel, your adrenaline starts to go in the ring. And she would take it a little bit further than you needed to. And we had a code word. Since most of our audience was kids and, well, we had adults too. We had, you know, full spectrum. But when we were hurting one another, for real, we would have to curse. So I remember being in a scissor lock with her once, and she was really squeezing my neck. And I just kept saying, fuck, fuck, you know. Get her to leave me alone because it was hurting. And she just, her adrenaline was going. She didn't hear me. She wasn't paying attention. She wasn't reacting. So I pinched her leg, and she let go. And then my adrenaline started going, so I really punched her in the face.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, it was really, that was the only time, and I remember getting out of the ring, and I told David, whoever was standing backstage, I said, this has got to stop. And it's not because Spanish Red was a bad person, it's because her adrenaline, and it wasn't just me, it was the other characters, we had all complained about her, but I think because she was so high profile and such a fantastic character, that they didn't mess with her. They just kind of said, oh, girls, suck it up and, you know, whatever. But, you know, and I talked to Spanish Red as well, and I said, you got to chill in the ring, you know, you're hurting everybody. And so that was really the only one that we had any kind of conflict with. And like I say, she was just an awesome person. We can't find her. I have looked, you know, forever. Her real name, I think, is Erica Martinez, but we cannot find her. So if anyone knows where she's at, please have her get a hold of someone. You know, because we really miss her.
I love the fact that you were part of a tag team in S&M, and it's great that you were from Parts Unknown. I always think that's great when a wrestler's from Parts Unknown. But the tag team, a lot of people remember you from, of course, TNA, when you were partnered with Tina Ferrari, of course, wanted to become Ivory in the WWE. You said before you knew we're going into GLOW, and you've remained great friends.
Well, actually, we had a little hiccup in our relationship to the tune of 25 years. So, really, I hadn't had any. I had a conversation with Lisa somehow. Oh, I know what it was. We got with the Raiders, we have reunions And we all keep in contact. Actually, I have another reunion in a couple months where we'll be doing, I think we're going to be on the field again for a halftime show for one of the Raider games.
Oh, nice.
They just told us that yesterday to keep our calendars open, you know, that kind of thing. So we have reunions. So I think that at one of the points through in between somewhere in the 25 years, I went to one of these reunions and got in contact with someone that knew Lisa and passed her number on to me. So I did have a phone conversation or two with her in the 25 years, but I'd never seen her until, the first time was at the taping of the documentary, actually.
Hey, that's interesting, though, Ashley, because you were friends before. Of course, you were filming GLOW together. Why do you think there was that gap of 25 years or so?
Well, when I left GLOW, like you'll see in the movie's just awesome. It tells a complete story. GLOW ended. There were a lot of injuries. Our ring was not, when you get into a wrestling ring, it's got some kind of a spring to it. And our ring was merely plywood with a covering.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we were hurt left and right. You know what I mean? And it wasn't because of our skills, because Mondo trained us wonderfully. And then once we got to Vegas, we had someone else. We had Jasmine and Dallas, I believe, trained us. And they had really extensive backgrounds in wrestling as well. So it wasn't a matter of us not being trained. It was a matter of our working conditions were really lax. You know, we should have been in a real ring, and we weren't. So a lot of the girls were getting hurt. You know, I actually stepped into the ring for the first time, a real ring, a couple weeks ago in Las Vegas when we did a little reunion show. It was night and day. It was night and day being in a real wrestling ring as opposed to what we were forced to work with, you know, filming GLOW.
That's a really interesting story. Nobody said to the Riviera or to, you know, of course, the company producing GLOW, hey, this is dangerous, we need a new ring?
We all said it, but I think, this is just my thought, that they either didn't care.
Yeah.
Or they didn't have the money to, maybe a wrestling ring is not cost efficient for them, for their budget, you know?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So I have no idea, but we were all getting hurt, and then people were leaving, you know, just out of nowhere. It's like, you know, my last injury was I was doing a splash off the third rope, and the person I was landing on sat up and sold the pain before I got to her, you know, before I landed on her completely, so that she sat up a little bit, and my back hyperextended. So, you know, it's just, you get in some really freak accidents, and then they didn't really take care of us. I mean, I was called a pussy before when I pulled a hamstring. That's what it was. And the director's, you pussy, get back in there. You know, what's wrong with you? And I'm hurt, you know?
Yeah.
And there really wasn't a lot of empathy with our injuries or, you know, that kind of thing. And David McClain was a great guy. It was more so, you know, Matt Simber being a hard ass, you know, and he didn't feel the pain, so he didn't think it occurred, I guess. You know, I don't know what made him such a hard ass, but, you know, he was pretty rough on it. So,
yeah.
You know, with the injuries, and then I think that would be a big part of it. And then myself, I got hired as a flight attendant, Continental Airlines. So I took off for a real career because we really didn't know where GLOW was going. And I knew I was being abused, like, mentally, and it was very hard on my body. I wasn't allowed to work out with weights because Matt wanted me to be like a Marilyn Monroe-type character, and he didn't want any muscle on me, you know, like I was going to get it overnight. Yeah, right. But, you know, it's like I had I tell you about the quarantine. It's like we had so many rules. You go to eat in the buffet, and Matt would be there going, portion control or push away or, you know, with smart remark or, hey, fat ass, you know. So it was pretty brutal, you know. It's like, you know, you're young and you take that stuff, you know, you take it. You don't just brush it off at that age. I was probably 22, maybe 23.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to just push it away and go, okay, you know, whatever, Matt, you know. So it was a matter of all of us just kind of leaving at our own separate times, and then we didn't know each other's names.
Right.
You know, I mean, of course, like I knew Jungle Woman and Tina. But other than that, I didn't know the other girls' real names. I mean, I knew Chainsaw and Spike as Donna and Sharon, but I had no idea what their last names were.
Well, it's really nice when you tell stories like this, how it was difficult for you at the time, how it's kind of come full circle now, and everyone has a real appreciation of the experience that you shared together, because it sounds like, you know, when you were actually filming, there were some real challenges there.
Yeah, it was really rough. And, you know, like, I have to be honest with you, the first time I saw Matt Simber after all of this was at the GLOW reunion when we were filming the documentary. And I just, you know, my stomach turned a little bit. I got to be honest with you. I was like, you know, this man made me miserable.
Yeah.
You know, he was picked on me all the time. And, you know, if you even ask the girls, they'll point me out as one of the ones that he just really verbally abused a lot. But, you know, it's been years, and you know what? Look what he did with me. I mean, if you look at the Ask Ashley skits that he had me doing, he offered me a wonderful opportunity. I had, like, 2 minutes of each episode on GLOW all to myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I remember at the time Matt said to me, you know, Ashley, if you don't know all your lines tomorrow, and we were shooting maybe a whole season, so, you know, 26 episodes in one day.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so he said, if you don't know all your lines when we film, I'm going to change Ask Ashley to tell Tina. So that's the kind of pressure he would put on us. And my letters, if anyone's familiar with my skit, I would read letters, you know, for the camera. And there was no writing on the letters. I told Matt, I said, can't you just give me the writing on the letters so I can read the letter and then deliver the response, because Ashley would answer these questions that people would write in, you know, needing an answer to, and Ashley would answer them. But I asked him, you know, can't you just put at least the letter,
sure,
read that, and he wouldn't let me do it. I had to memorize everything.
I don't understand that. That would seem very simple.
Well, and that's what I'm telling you. It's like things like that didn't make sense.
Yeah.
You know, like we got in and I wanted to be paid for two characters because I was doing two characters' work. And we weren't getting paid, you know, SAG wages or anything by any means. We were getting paid $400 a week. Of course, our room and board was taken care of because we lived at the Riviera and ate there. We could eat at the buffet anytime we wanted to. But, you know, I'm playing two characters, so I'm rehearsing twice as hard. And I didn't want double pay. I just said, give me something. And he wouldn't. So then he phased out Sarah and Mabel because Royal Hawaiian felt the same way. It was a lot of work.
So you say you filmed two seasons of the show and then you took a job as a flight attendant. Was it a little bittersweet to leave GLOW at that point, or did you think, yeah, this is really enough for me?
Well, I had always, you know, as a kid in high school, you know, when you set your career goals, I had always wanted to be an actress and a flight attendant because I figured I could do both. And there is a soap star. She's on, I think, Young and the Restless, that still is an actress and a flight attendant. And it's pretty cool because with their schedules, you can do both. So that was always my career objective. And so when I got the job as a flight attendant, I thought, okay, I'm going to get my domicile back to L.A. so I can, you know, achieve my goals. And so that's why I took off. And it didn't faze me because we didn't know where GLOW was going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we did the pilot, and then we were told that it got sold and the show was syndicated. But then after that, we didn't get, you know, any of the major stations. It wasn't ABC, NBC. It was, you know, off stations. Like,
right,
in Chicago, it was Superstation 50, you know. So how did we know? So it really wasn't, I didn't have a whole lot of feeling with leaving. I miss the girls, of course, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, once again, you're young and you move on.
You told me one time that you have never really seen a lot of your matches. It was a different era, right? There was no Facebook, no Twitter. Cable television was different. Have you gone back and actually watched those episodes of GLOW?
Well, it's really funny. We couldn't see anything. We had the, you know, you do your live show, and then you didn't know whether you needed to improve on something or, you know what I mean? You couldn't dissect your performances. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can regularly. You know, you can say, okay, I got to work on this. So we waited. I didn't see any of the GLOW episodes until, I want to say, 2002. There was someone online I just Googled, and he had all of the episode somehow, and he made a 4-hour compilation of just my work and sent it to me.
Oh, wow.
Yes, he was awesome. And he has such a long name. I'm sorry, I can't remember it. I know it starts with an M, but he was awesome, you know. So that's when I saw my matches. And now, of course, they're all over YouTube, so I can see them anytime I want.
That's really nice. Since you left GLOW, what else have you been up to? You worked as a flight attendant for a while. What have you been doing since?
Well, I worked as a flight attendant, and then I happened to be attracted to a passenger, which ended me up in Chicago and married with two kids. So then I became a real estate agent, and the market started to fizzle, so then I got my license as a cosmetologist.
Okay.
And right now I have a salon in my home, so I just have a small clientele because in 2010 I opened my own business And I created and patented a product called Earring Go Round. It's a tabletop earring organizer. Believe it or not, David, women have problems with earrings, and that's been a lifelong problem for me. Yeah, where you think we're late because we're late, but you're late because you're trying to accessorize at the last minute and you can't find the right accessories, and then you get out the door and you don't feel good. So with my product, you're good to go. You know, everything's right there, like, you know, like in the stores. It's like a display at home kind of thing.
Right, right.
So I'm really working on that a lot right now. And then, of course, all this stuff with Glow, I'm trying to get into the social networking thing and incorporate my Ashley Cartier with people knowing that I do own Earring Go Round and trying to market it that way. So, you know, I'm learning everything on my own, and it's pretty challenging, but I'm getting through it.
It must be really a great feeling to see, you know, this documentary and to see Glow going through this renaissance. Of course, at the prestigious Cauliflower Alley Club last year, there was an official Glow Girls reunion. And if I'm not mistaken, that was the first time you'd all appeared in public together in over 20 years.
Yes, other than we weren't in public when we filmed the documentary. That was actually in 2010. And then last year was the first Cauliflower Alley event that I attended. And, yes, in public, that was the first time we were all in public together.
Do you think that's going to be a yearly thing? Because it seems like last year and again this year that the Glow Girls love getting back together.
Well, I know this year a lot of it was because, you know, Tina was recognized. She was honored. You know, we were pretty proud of her. So I think that was more incentive for the girls to show up, as well as the reunion aspect, you know. So there were quite a bit of girls this year. Don't you think more so this year than last year? I think there were a lot more girls this year.
I do think there were more this year. And, of course, like you said, you know, Lisa Moretti got a CAC Women's Wrestling Award. But I also think it was maybe, actually, because the year before, a lot of you had a great time and maybe word of mouth spread, and that may have helped this year as well.
Right, right. And then having it in Las Vegas, I mean, what better place? You know, it's just a really great reunion, vacation. And, you know, the activities that the CAC, you know, that they organized for us are all wonderful. You know, the banquets and, you know, you're there.
Well, we should also point out that Little Egypt, of course, one of the Glow Girls, gives a seminar out there. Now, she's done it 2 years in a row. I hope that she continues to do so in the future. But her seminars focus on what you mentioned earlier, using social media, social networking to raise your profile and to really promote yourself, because that's certainly necessary in professional wrestling.
Really, yes. And she actually just recently posted, because I had missed that and I was very upset. She told me the 2 days, and I thought they were both the same seminar, and she had two different seminars. But anyway, I had missed it, and she just posted it on her Facebook. I don't know if it's on her Little Egypt Facebook account. She does have a PowerPoint that anyone can see, and it's really interesting and informative.
I think some of her videos are actually on YouTube as well.
Well, that would be good, but I would just really encourage anyone who wants to, you know, further themselves in the social media outlet and use that her information is very useful and to look that up.
Do people still recognize you when you go around town, and did they come up to you and say, I remember you from Glow?
No, not at all. I was really surprised because, you know, no one recognizes me out. But I have run across people. I don't really tell people unless we get into a conversation and where it either gets brought up or we're very close and we get into one another's backgrounds. But other than that, I don't get recognized. And I'm really surprised that, you know, when I got into all this, like poking around the Glow thing, like in 2002, I was very surprised that I had a fan club and I didn't even know it. Somebody through Yahoo, Jerry Thrift, had a fan club for me. And I had some problem with being, confused with Tiffany Mellon as a porn star. And I had kids at that point, and I did not want to be associated with any type of porn.
Right.
So I went to this guy, this Jerry from the Yahoo fan club, and I said, I have a problem here. You know, I have nothing to do with that. And he said that there was a mix-up, that some of the fans must have thought that Tiffany Mellon was myself, you know, because, like I said, our names, if you look at things, if you Google, a lot of times my name's not even there because they don't know my name. I have my maiden name is a mouthful, you know, it's not recognizable, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, it's just, I got, Jerry Thrift took care of that thing for me. I could see all over the internet. It was like, Tiffany Mellon is not Ashley Cartier, they're two different people, and it was really awesome the way he turned that around for me. And then, you know, as well on Facebook, I just got a Facebook public figure page, I think maybe last year, and I've got over 5,000 likes, you know, on that. So there is a big demand for our characters, and people are interested still after, how long did we film? Maybe 30 years ago? You know, somewhere between 25 and 30 years?
Yeah.
You know, it's just crazy. And, you know, it's a 35-ish crowd, you know what I mean, where they were kids, you know. And last year I was fortunate enough through Facebook, I had a fan when I did the shows back in the 80s. His name was Cody, and he was about 10 years old, and he'd show up every appearance, every live show, with a sign, I love you, Ashley, something, dressed in a little dress shirt, little guy, so precious, so cute. So I get a message on Facebook, and this girl says that she's Cody's girlfriend, and he doesn't think that I'll remember him. And we get to CAC last year, and I coordinate with her, we're going to surprise him. So we texted each other, and once he got up the escalator with her, I was at the top of the escalator, and I was screaming, you know, I was in Ashley garb because I had been doing something in the nostalgia room.
Right.
And I was saying, Cody, Cody, and, you know, it brought a tear to his eye.
Oh.
He is an accountant now. He's 35 years old. He said he drug his mother to all the matches. She waited in line for 3 hours back in the day just to see us, you know, perform. And it was really touching. And those kind of things, when you have fans that really, really appreciate your work, that's the stuff that gets to you. You know what I mean? And I was fortunate enough to do that for him. And we still keep in contact, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's a really sweet story. And with the documentary, what is the actual name of the documentary, the official name?
It's Glow, the Story of the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling at www.glowthemovie.com. And you can find out, we're getting more and more screenings. Every time the movie screens, we're invited by another festival to show the movie again. So I'm pretty fortunate. It's going to show in Chicago sometime in November, which I have my two boys will be able to see the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then also it's going to screen in San Francisco the end of August, beginning of September. They haven't set an accurate date at this point. But I'm from the San Francisco area originally, so my family and friends there from back home will also be able to see the movie.
But you've already seen the movie at several screenings. What cities have you gone to already?
I've seen it in the L.A. area. I was at Newport Beach and then in Los Feliz, the Los Angeles area, on May 3rd. And that was a big one. All the girls were there. There were about 20 girls, I believe, at least 20 of the original cast members were in attendance.
That must have been fun watching it with a live audience and feeling their energy.
Yes, exactly. And then there's a Q&A afterwards. So any of the girls that are there, they usually have them answer questions from the audience. And, you know, it was really funny, David. I have to tell you, I haven't seen Chainsaw and Spike. And I mean, I saw them at the documentary reunion, but I haven't seen them in so long or been able to have a talk with them or catch up, you know. So after the documentary screening in Los Angeles, Chainsaw and Spike and I stayed up all night into the next day, 3 p.m., we finally left each other. So we had a really good amount of time to catch up and giggle and, you know, just really reminisce about all the stuff we did and catch up on each other's lives now. And they're sisters. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, they're actually sisters, and they are just the most, in the documentary, they really steal the show. They're very quick-witted, you know, spontaneous, and they're just really great gals that have wonderful personalities, you know?
Well, I'm really glad that this documentary was put together because I watched Glow as a kid and kind of relived that a little bit. What do you think Glow means to wrestling history and female wrestling in general?
I really think, you know, from my memory at the time, there weren't any female. There were big time females like Rockin' Robin, you know, the old time really hardy athletic females. You know what I mean?
Sure. Wendy Richter and.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Yes, and we didn't have their films to look at because they didn't have a lot available for us. And once we were struggling with the, you know, the availability as well, there was no internet and all that. So what we had to do was, you know, we choreographed our own matches. So we had to always come up with new moves and new skits, and then we had storylines. Like they would tell us, okay, you know, you're wrestling these two, and this is who's going to win. So that's how they would tell us. So then we would have to create a story amongst the four of us.
Interesting.
You know, and usually, you know, I would sit on the turnbuckle, blow kisses, and you know, then somebody would pull me in, beat the pulp out of me, and then Lisa would save the day. So you know what I mean? It was kind of like always something like that, but we were all in character. And it was just, you know, it was a lot of work. I mean, we did everything. We did our rap songs. I mean, we all made up our own rap songs. And you know, we were all, Queenie, she made up the theme song. All the music, I think, Queenie, you know, set the lyrics to and had the music. And, you know, we were a group that just gone all out to make the show the best it could be on this low budget because they didn't hire a lot of outside people. A lot of it was our own backgrounds and our own input, you know. So it was pretty wild, and I'm really happy with what we produced. And the documentary tells a wonderful story about, you know, the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you know, if anyone, I'm sure everyone remembers Fiji, Mount Fiji. Her health is suffering, and you know, we just hope that she can get out. She's bedridden. Mm-hmm. And we hope that she can get up and join in all this. She has no internet access, but she's still got her wits about her, and she's funny as they come. And I get to visit her every once in a while. I did visit her when I was in L.A. It's just, she's a sweetheart. Another one, you know. And we looked up to her, and Mount Fiji and Matilda the Hun were our go-to. Mm-hmm. You know, we were like quarantined. If we had any problems or we were upset, even boyfriend problems, whatever it may be, those two were like the Mama Glow girls, you know. They would set us straight and help us out and, you know, be a shoulder to cry on or whatever. So, you know, my heart is really dear to those two, you know.
Sure. I always thought that the modern-day divas owed a lot to the Glow Girls. I thought the Glow Girls had a lot of those aspects of being more than just wrestlers and putting on kind of a show. And so for me, I think that a lot of what we see on WWE programming kind of has a little tip of the cap to what the Glow Girls started in the 80s.
Right, and I'm sorry, I didn't answer your question. It's that we looked at the guys for our moves, you know what I mean? Because we didn't have a lot with the Wendy Richters, you know, the Rock Rod. We didn't have their footage. We had a lot of the guys. So that's, you know, I think we were the pioneers of the female, you know, wrestlers. Not to take away from those women, but we had the sitcom aspect with it, too.
Right.
We offered a little bit. I'm surprised no one else has done a show like ours because it was really effective. I mean, you know, wrestling, I don't know. I knew nothing about wrestling when I got into it. And so for me to watch the wrestling with the sitcom stuff, all the skits, it was very entertaining for me.
No, I'm with you on that. I like wrestling when it has entertainment. There's good storylines, good character development. And GLOW was all about that.
Right, right. I mean, some of them are hilarious. The Urban Dictionary, I mean, with the Soul Patrol.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, use the word before in a sentence, and the girl says, I got it, 2 + 2, before, you know? So it's like stuff like that. It was slapstick, hee-haw humor. It was none of this. I mean, television's gotten crazy now with, you know, there's no censoring anymore. My kids, you know, they watch MTV, and you think, what kind of education are they getting from MTV? It's really a shame. You know, you have a couple young kids, too. So I'm hoping that the trend turns back around to more of like the hee-haw humor where you have innuendos instead of in-your-face stuff. You know what I'm saying?
So there's no question that today's wrestlers are tremendous athletes, but yeah, the direction of the industry is what we're talking about and can be argued whether it's going in the right way.
Right, right. I mean, you know, the gestures towards their crotches and, you know, that kind of stuff where, you know, one of the really appealing things about being in GLOW initially was that it was sold to me as a children's show. Mm-hmm. So I thought I was going to be like a cartoon character for kids. I mean, we were supposed to have, you know, action figures and that kind of thing. Now, if I had known it was going to be a frat boy, use your imagination kind of thing, you know, I wouldn't have been appealing to me, but the sense that it was for children, you know what I mean? That's what really got me.
Excellent. Well, in the documentary, all the Glow Girls will be larger than life. They'll be on the big screen, and it really seems appropriate because you really were all larger than life during your time on the show. I'm just glad that your place in wrestling history is secure. And recap again, the name of the documentary and where people can find the trailer.
The name of the documentary is GLOW, The Story of the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. And you can find that information. There's a trailer on the internet, and there's also information on how to visit one of the screenings at glowthemovie.com. There's also a Facebook page on Glow the Movie. I would say, I think it's just Glow the Movie or Glow the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling or The Story of. If you just Google something like that, you'll get it on Facebook as well. And there you'll get more current updates. I think they will probably be available faster than going on the glowthemovie.com. But if you do want to see a clip, like a teaser, you know, a trailer of the movie, then go to glowthemovie.com.
Ashley, where can people find you? Twitter, Facebook?
I have a Facebook public figure page, and you can find that Ashley Cartier Glow. That's my, you know, Ashley and then Cartier like a middle name, and then Glow as my last name. So you can find me there, and I do update my page, and I interact with my fans and pretty much on a regular basis. So visit me there and like my page and stay in contact with me.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And I love, you know, kind of going back a trip down memory lane and hearing more about your experience as a Glow girl. Congratulations to you and all the girls.
All right. Thank you, David. And I'll see, they've already set the CAC date, right, for next year. It's April, is it April 15th?
April 15th through the 18th in Las Vegas. And for wrestling fans, if you haven't been to a Cauliflower Alley Club reunion, it's really a special occasion. So definitely see you there and hope to talk to you real soon.
All right. Great. Thanks a lot, David. Take care. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed today's program. Alex and I will be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.
All right, well that's okay.